Avi Adoni Dodi. We enter into this study to draw close to you for the sake of holy service and the fulfillment of your will for us and for all of Israel and for this entire planet. Please assist our efforts and guide our understandings. Let us internalize your Torah to the depths of our being so that we become transformed by your will and its truths. Let neither ourselves or anyone else come into stumbling as a result of this study. Ga'enai va'abita nifla'ot mitoratecha. Okay, so we are, we spent the last week or so looking at the Ani Ayin pulse and how it plays out in a lot of different fronts. And in particular, I think the last one we explored was the mitzvah noga alternation, like the aspects of life that are scripted by the Torah, that this is what you do, this is how you do it, this is what you think about when you do it, these are the accoutrements, and that's all prescribed. And that's kind of the realm of Kedusha. It's, there's a certain level of holiness, like whatever that term means, it's a very confusing term, but there's a certain level of Kedusha that comes from fulfilling a mitzvah. As I always say, like kind of stepping into this beam of divine, pillar of divine will, beam of divine will, and become, like, that's how I always say it, but one's existential state of separation from Hashem dissolves and one becomes nothing but a limb of divine will.
Let me say that.
Sorry, yeah. So the mitzvot are called 620 amudei, or pillars of light that emanate from the crown of the king. And the crown is the will of Hashem. And the, each one of the, mitzvot is a kind of beam of divine will, of divine light. And when a person fulfills a mitzvah, it's like stepping into this beam of divine will. And our existential state of separation from Hashem dissolves, and we become nothing but a limb of divine will. Just like my hand becomes a limb of my will. When I'm thirsty, I pick up the water and take a sip, and it's state of separation, like independence dissolves, and it's simply a an extension of my will. And so that's what we, and so there's, it's a very, it's subtle, but it's a very, very profound state of dveikut with Hashem, that from our perspective, there is nothing that compares to it. It is the deepest possible state of dveikut with Hashem. The question becomes, why don't we feel it if that's the case? And that's the whole other story to talk about. But,
Wait.
Yes.
Any clues?
Don't do that. Well, no, I mean, I think that it's, it seems to come down to the subtlety of it. That is, that, I mean, we've all, I think we've probably all had experiences where we did taste that, the power of those moments. And, but it's a evolved level, and we're still working up to, cultivating the taste buds, the refinement of taste of pleasure buds to be able to, genuinely take pleasure from those levels of the Veku.
Do you think if we entered it with, from meditation, it would be more?
I think preparation, like, you know, hasana, like the preparations, that's for sure kind of primes us to, we have more of a fighting chance of tuning in there. And, yeah, and then there are certain mitzvot also that are more accessible.
Right.
In that way. Like tefillah and sukkah and, you know, shofar, the blah, I mean, that's, you know, it kind of goes in a way that you could feel its reverberations.
Well, when you talk about separation, I happen to know that people who are
especially sensitive with their taste buds. They're wine experts.
Uh-huh.
They live a life of everything else that they eat must be bland.
Uh-huh.
Nothing else can disturb. Yep, they're not to eat anything else that is.
It would affect
their sensitivity and their taste buds.
What?
So that sur mirat, the aseitel, in order to develop that taste chunk, identity,
uh-huh.
we need to separate from a lot of other
uh-huh.
things. So with the hand of Kaddish, separate. It's a comparison.
Interesting. Yeah, so, and we were looking at, I mean, we kind of left off, I remember the last thing that we were talking about was the, the relationship between Klipat Noga and the revolving sword that guards the way. And you had asked about sources that explicitly connect those two. And so I did bring a couple that we could learn, but it is a little bit going off the
beaten path.
But yeah, like kind of what the flow of the text itself, which was the next section of the text itself that we were going
to
do.
You want me to send that out to the group on the event?
I think we need to learn it together, really.
Yeah, I think it
sounds
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And the next of the flow of the text, which is really, I think it's, we can make it fit, is the actual Hebrew text of the Kamar Rebbe, the Ber Maim Chaim, and the Magid Mezrich, and Rav Tzadok HaKohen about the power of, like usually, generally, you know, the Talmud asks the famous question, whose service is greater, the one who does because they've been commanded or the one who does from their own initiative? And it answers the counter, it chooses the counterintuitive response, which is the one who does because they're commanded, presumably, perhaps because it's human nature to resist being told what to do. And so the performance of a mitzvah has not only something that's pleasing to Hashem, as Hashem has expressed, this is what he wants, but it's also having to kind of get over ourselves, which is a...
That is human nature, to have that resistance.
Especially Jews. That's what Rav Tzadok says. That Jews can't stand to be told what to do by another Jew.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt. I was like, oh, that's old.
He has a whole teaching about that. But, so presumably because one has to overcome that resistance, and so there is an ego softening that happens in a mitzvah, which doesn't happen in a self-initiated service. So that's kind of the party line, and that's what's repeated. But the Kamarna Rebbe actually brings sources, himself shows, and brings sources to support himself, that there is something to be said about the other as well, that there is a sense in which actually the Klipat Noga, the self-initiated offering to Hashem, is really, from another angle, even superior than the mitzvah level.
I should say that normally you would divide that into male-female, because the female is the one who is not mitzvah,
right?
Because we're exempted from all these mitzvahs because of our other occupations.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? There's also people who go into the realm of Noga and Makdish. Somebody says, I take this amount of flock or money or whatever it is, and I make it Hekdish.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're not commanded.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that is gadol she'eno mitzuvah
sometimes.
You can probably find other examples from the masculine side of Kedusha as well.
Right.
In which books had more mikumar narot all of the things that you mentioned just now?
It's in the introduction to his Ketem Ophir, I think it's called, which is his commentary on Megillat Esther.
Ketem Ophir?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And the introduction to that. His introduction to that. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering if it's, you know, you're talking about people already working within the context of the mitzvot. In other words, we're already doing the ones that are commanded, and then the things that are not commanded are that extra. I'm asking this as a question. Presumably that's what they're talking about within the context of Torah mitzvot. Or is it just outside of the context of Torah mitzvot where, you know, you create your own avodat Hashem?
Well, it's not so much talking about like creating ritual, like improvising ritual. It's more talking about the aspects of life that we have to do that really are most of life, really, happens in the interstitial spaces between the moments or opportunities of mitzvah. And so how to... and those are like confusing in terms of how do we negotiate that? How do we navigate? How do we sort out what's an indulgence and what's really necessary and how to do them in the most good serving, God serving way and all that kind of stuff. It's an aspect of life that is, is inescapable. And there is a lot of, in the traditional sources, there is a lot of yira around noga, that because it's, you know, it is secular in its way, and so the enjoyment of it has a certain, like, ego involvement, and so it's klipa, and so how do you, you know... Like, generally the advice is to minimize klipa and noga as much as possible. But is that the last word? Is that the only word? Is that the, I mean, like, what's, and the bottom line is, ultimately, why we're spending so much time here is because it's associated symbolically in our teachings with the revolving sword that guards Eden's way, and it's supposed to convey the idea that it's dangerous, a revolving fiery sword, it's dangerous, so, and it's constantly moving, like if we read this text, it's constantly changing and a new face and a new, And so what are you supposed to do with this now and that now? And there's no, like precedent. You can't look to what your neighbor's doing to see what you're supposed to be doing. And you can't like get it and then that's the end of the story because the next moment it's going to change and you have to be ready for that. So,
no, I think we both
and I do think that it is, what you were saying, I do think that the mitzvot have a more masculine association to them symbolically, and the klipat noga is more feminine. And it's really, the klipat noga is very much our, kind of our individuality. It's the places where we can express our preferences. Like it's, you know, what's your, like in mitzvah, you look up in the rule book, what do you think about when you say this act and how should your limbs move and what should you have? It's all really scripted. And so there isn't much place for individuality or individual expression. So, whereas Klipat Noga is really a, all about that. I don't know about all about that, but largely about them.
So it's Esther when she makes her decisions. Then,
yeah, she's like getting the Ruach HaKodesh. That's also Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh is, what was I just reading about how Ruach HaKodesh... Oh, I was reading Rabbi Ginsberg's commentary on a Baal Shem Tov story where he was talking about how, in the story, as he interpreted it, was conveying that, again, I mean, I developed this in the book, but that Ruach HaKodesh is actually a higher level of transmission than prophecy. And that Moshe had, you know, was the prophet, greatest prophet of all time, before and after. But in terms of Ruach HaKodesh, there was, how did he say, I can't remember how he, you know, there was room for improvement, and that the Mashiach is going to be the master of Ruach HaKodesh, even though, and the Baal Shem Tov, and I mean, and Moshe was the master of prophecy. Somehow it was like, because there wasn't, Moshe couldn't really forge, I don't know why this is connected, but what I'm remembering is that Moshe couldn't forge a complete peace among the people, and somehow that was because his master was prophecy instead of Ruach HaKodesh. I can't remember.
And he initiates like three things, right? When you got that Ruach HaKodesh, the Ruach HaKodesh.
Yeah.
That's his individual contribution.
Right. And he gets it right on for all of them.
Yeah.
That's me, that's tough. Is that what we're saying? Is it midato? So Moshe is putting shlosha dvarim midato of his own da'at.
Uh-huh.
Are we saying that that was his Ruach HaKodesh?
Yeah, I think that would be true to say that.
Okay.
And Rashi calls da'at Ruach HaKodesh. Like when it talks about the Mishkan and the traits that need to be found, it's chokhmah bina v'da'at. Or Chokma Tavuna, I can't remember. But anyway, Rashi says, Da'at, that's Ruach HaKodesh. Which is why in the meditation, the variation of the meditation, from the Mishnah Berurah, that is the...
Mishnah Berurah is the meditation.
Yeah. I'll say
if we mention,
if you go on her website, there's audios, videos, of meditation, and
it's all about this.
It's very special. I think there's 7 of them. Is that correct?
I could be. No, I'm 10. There's 10. But here, this part, let's see. How about you?
Is meditations on the website?
Yeah, they're really good. They're like 7-minute ones, and she really explains beautifully.
Here's the, not behaving. Okay.
Yeah,
maybe it's not for now.
So which one's clear?
So there's the just the one. So this one is the top one is the one that's in the first page of the Mishnah Berurah, which is Shavitia, is the fulfillment of Shavitia Shem and Nevi Tamid, which is the four letters with the Nikudot of Yirah beneath it, which is the Nikudot of Yirah and Simcha. And so the meditation is really kind of captures the vibration because the letters are static and it's only when you add Nikudot that they kind of move and have vibrate and convey what they have to convey. And so And so the nikudot of yira and simcha, so the yutke vavke becomes the very essence and panimiut of yira and simcha. And that's the meditation on the first page of the Mishnah Berurah that is, according to the Mishnah Berurah, i.e. the Chafetz Chaim, is what it means, is the fulfilling of Shiviti Hashem Adegi Tami, of holding Hashem before me at all times. So, but then there is the second one here, which is O-A-I-A, the vowels. I'm not going to say the word, it's the name itself. O-A-I-A, that is the kavanot of the Rishash on the Ari, so he has shemod with nikudot of every sort, it's a whole thing, but the combination of nikudot that he brings as the vibration of da'at, which is the connector between the head and the heart, and the kind of more visceral experience of Dveikut of Hashem, is yo and then hey and then va and then hey. So the meditation that I do is a six syllable meditation of yo and then hey and then va and then hey and then yi and then va. The yi and va is the Mishnah Berurah. And oh wow, what a surprise. right, and so dot.
So what are all the other ones?
They're just the same, just cards like for other people. Okay. Henry, you still there? Yeah. Okay, so...
Yes, I'm here, I'm here. yes, of course I'm here, okay.
okay. I just wasn't sure whether I had accidentally...
No, I'm here.
So should we do the... What are you shaking your head for? Which one?
I feel terrible about derailing things.
Uh-huh. Well, okay, so then, let's do, I think we'll probably get through the Kamana Rebbe ones, and we'll probably be able to dip into the other.
What page are we on?
Okay, so we're on page 167. Lucia.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll just, the Kamana Rebbe is 1806 to 1874, and he cites a teaching by the Magid of Mezrich, who's in the 1700s.
Where did he live?
The Kamana lived in Kamana, Ukraine, or, you know, it was, yeah, it's like, I think it was probably Poland when he was there, but it's Ukraine now.
Was it 1600?
His 1806 to 1874. And it's there. But he's giving it over in the name of the Magid Mezrich, 1700-1772, that affirms the value of Klipat Noga as a true service that is even superior to mitzvah in a certain way. So that's the radicalness of his, because generally, the way that our kind of religious tradition approaches Klipat Noga is that it's something that's dangerous and should be minimized as much as possible. I try not to be involved in secular things. The bolded English is the direct translation of the Hebrew. The unbolded, but it doesn't look like it is bolded and unbolded, whatever.
She is. Well, that's the first two lines.
Yeah, okay. Bolded English is a direct translation of the Hebrew. The unbolded text provides background clarifications. So let's read the Hebrew and then read the translation with its filler, just so we have the whole picture of things. So, you want to read? Okay, so this is the idea. So the source of this idea, this whole idea, is from the Zohar and Mishpatim. Mishpatim is Savad and Mishpatim. It's actually the source in the Zohar for most of our teachings about reincarnation and things like that. So the Zohar here is talking about Kishutei Shechina, which is really bedecking the Shechina, like beautifying the Shechina, which in general is understood, how do we do that, by the beautiful Torah teachings that we innovate, and because it's really about Kiddushim a lot, innovate and give out and share with the world, as well as the mitzvah practice that we do. Like every mitzvah is like a jewel in the crown of the Shechina's headdress.
This is a half of a piece of a sentence. It's kashtag the kishutim delo habu.
Okay, so this kishutei Shechina is the way it's described in the Zohar is that she is bedecked, she is beautified through these kishutim, these jewels and ornaments, delo habu, that have never been before. Like this is what the Zohar is. Shehavu and Lohavu. And it's gonna be, and so here, like that's it. Kishutim de Lohavu is basically Klipat Noga. That's what we're talking about.
The Torah and Mitzvot and Kishutim
de Havu. Right. So Torah and Mitzvot they're not new. No one's inventing really the Mitzvah. It's, in fact, the less you invent and the more you abide is better. And so they are kishutim dehavu.
Klomar kishutei hashchina shekvar hayu nevelam.
Right.
Already always
been. Right. They've been since Sinai. Hashem gave us these commandments, and we observe them. And so, and they are, and they beautify the Shechina. Who's the Shechina? It's us. So we are becoming more pleasing to Hashem, pleasing in Hashem's eyes, through our fulfillment of these mitzvot that we're showing Hashem how much we love Him and that we're willing, you know, and how much we enjoy doing things that make Him happy. And so we're the Shechina.
Sorry, what does it mean we are the Shechina?
Because Knesset Yisrael is a synonymous term for the Shechina. Meaning, yeah.
Okay.
That,
okay.
Yeah.
פעם כשאדם מייחד בענייני עולם הזה, הוא מקשב בהם השכינה.
And so, wait a minute. So kishutei Shechina shekvar hayu. Okay. But when a person creates a dveikut through in this world,
mechayev need making the dveikut.
Yeah. Umikashet behem hashchina and bedecks the Shechina through their practices, their mitzvot and practices.
Why is this mitzvot?
It's going to go to the other.
In
yeah.
It's in your ne'alam hazeh, not a mitzvot.
Right. You're right. Because it's going to go, it's saying, nikra, when a person takes every moment of their life, and seeks what is most good serving God serving option here, which is another way of saying what would make Hashem most happy here. Then
he is called Nikishukim Delohabu.
Then it's called bedecking the Shechina with things that have never been before. It's your unique and original offering to Hashem, contribution to Hashem, like a love message to Hashem.
What you're put here for. Because only you could do it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That it's like it could be that the only reason you came into incarnation was for that moment. Could be. Right. It's a way that Hashem has been served and honored that has never happened before in the universe, like the circumstances that came together and you in it, and you're recognizing what is the most good-serving, God-serving way to meet this moment. That's a bedecking of the Shekhinah that has never been before in the universe. It's acknowledging here how special that is. That, you know, it's not just stam. It's a real chidush that isn't necessarily a chidush of text of like a string of a divrei Torah. It's a chidush of bringing, like, of catching the Ruach HaKodesh that was coming down in that moment and applying it to the circumstance at hand in a way that you, bingo, you got it. And Hashem received it heart to heart.
So could it be making a shidduch for somebody?
Yeah, it could be any, like the whole realm of life, Klipat Noga, which is really the bulk of life that we, you know, that is finally getting some kavod, really, because it doesn't really get so much kavod. It's like kind of considered dangerous and likely to pull you away from your mark instead of towards your mark. And
I mean, it just seems so beautiful because it could be like even how someone ties their tickle or whatever. It could be anything to like,
right.
You know, that's their creative moment in doing something. I mean, it's so beautiful.
It really is. It really is. It really
is. But that's my question. I feel like I need a clarification because when you say that the mitzvah is, you know, in done before, if you just take lighting Shabbat candles.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's not 6:20, but still, the way one woman does it is completely different to another woman.
Uh-huh.
Like, the cover now, I mean, you can just do it.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the way somebody does it, or, like you say, is that the mitzvah to cover your hair.
Uh-huh.
But now, you know, how you do it,
uh-huh.
So I'm a bit confused because I don't see how the mitzvah itself is not infused with something that is there.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, like you could say that there's, like, everything here, that there's the polarities, and then there's those ones that, and everything's interincluded. So some mitzvot are more available to be individualized, and some are less so. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the interface between mitzvah and noga, which is never.
Yeah. If there's a mitzvah, there's noga.
Right.
I mean, maybe you just call it kavana.
Right.
The tefillah is not like any other tefillah. Every time you daven, it's so different than any other time.
Right.
That's the mitzvah.
Right. But there is a sense in which, you know, with the liturgy, so it is the same words every time. Like it, which is, it is, right. But still, there is something, it's different from someone who says, you know, like pauses and is moved to formulate their own.
So you say the parameters are set up for you, sort of. You fit yourself in.
And some mitzvot are more amenable to personalization, and some are less so.
Can I just tell a joke of Shlomo's really fast? And sure. There's the chassidim, right? Mm-hmm. So they say, if you could wish for anything, what would you want? So one says, you know, I want to travel the world and see Hashem's creation all over the world, you know. The other one says, yeah, well, I want to go on a cruise in a boat, you know, and see the seas. And the last one says, I just want to know what it feels like to put my left shoe on first. And then my right shoe. So that's the line. You know, the mitzvah.
Sarah Yehuda, you need to say it. Yeah. When we say kavana, can we connect it to da'at, to svirata da'at? The brain, the machshava ve'aregesh, they're connecting to each other. And if we have the kavana and we're not bringing it to an action, so it will be like Adam HaRishon that his leg was not as you show in the illustration, that he was not...
Ragleha Yarga Mami?
Bidu, Ken. I'm asking.
So, I mean, I think that like Ruach HaKodesh really happens through Da'at. And so...
Okay.
I think that, yeah...
So much יש לנו רוח הקודש, יש לנו גם really in כוונה פנימית עמוקה. But does it mean that we need to bring it into an action? If we are connecting to Adam HaRishon with the illustration that you showed?
I mean, generally in our practice we do kind of give a special weight or value to bringing something down into action.
Action, okay.
That's kind of the primary front of tikkun for us is the body, the training the body. But yeah, but it doesn't mean that nothing happens if it's just a thought. And I did, I think it was from, I'm not sure where this came from. It was, I think, from Rav Chaver, who was, a student, a contemporary of the Leshem.
Ken, it's Mishpucha Shiri, Ken.
I think it's him who says that when you are praying for kind of Gashmi things, like just physical things, no shame, but we need those, refuah and things like that, then you have to pronounce the prayer, your thought and intention in prayer out loud. And if you're praying for things that are really just purely spiritual, then you don't have to voice it out loud.
Okay, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, where, did we finish the paragraph? Right. So, Kishu Tereshkina Shalo Hayu Adayin Me'olam, like those, Dechidushe, Kishu team that we do, is Chashu Yoter, has an importance to it that is real and even superior from a certain angle. I mean, you can't, you know, it's all these things are so delicate how to, because the mitzvah is a mitzvah, I mean, it's a mitzvah. So, but yeah.
So, do we start there, one time?
Yeah, so, but let's just read the, like, because look how long the translation is of this little one. Yeah. So this is the intention of the Zohar's teaching about the matter of bedecking the Shekhinah, which we do through our mitzvah practice, and to our study and spiritual strivings, i.e., all the things that find grace in God's eyes. The Zohar divides our adorning of the Shekhinah into two categories, those that are havu and those that are lo havu. The Zohar explains that the commands we fulfill, i.e., our formal mitzvot and Torah study, these are adornments that have been, meaning to say adornments of the Shekhinah that have been in the world since they were commanded at Sinai. But when we connect earth to heaven by finding ourselves in a this-worldly predicament and thoughtfully identify the most spiritually productive response when there is no explicit halacha to guide our way, we bedeck the Shekhinah with adornments that have not been, lo havu, meaning our quote-unquote right action was absolutely unique to us as individuals in that particular context with all its particular elements. That good deed is a service and adornment that has never been before in the universe. It is lo havu, and this makes it most valuable.
What's
Havu? Havu means it has been already, and Lo Havu is it's not a mitzvah, so it's kubanoga, that a person found the response to the challenge of the moment and acted in a way that was right and pleasing to Hashem.
I need an example.
Say one of your children is having some kind of problem in school or in friendship or something like that. Maybe they don't ask for help, but you sense that there's something happening and you kind of find a way to kind of guide them in a way that helps them and helps them to kind of find their way through that challenge. So that's Shalohavu. That's a unique, you might have, thought about it before. You might have seen someone else dealing with their kids or whatever. But the configuration of the external circumstances and your child's involvement in it is in essence, it's never been before in the universe. It's a completely unique moment with a completely unique demand of guidance, and you are catching the Ruach HaKodesh, and it's
wow. Okay, let us share.
Sure.
Okay, so I went to England to the birthday, 80th birthday of my brother, and there are 60 people all Jews together, and we all know what's happening in England, what's going on.
Right.
And I said, when I have the microphone, I don't want anyone to take the microphone away from me. And I gave over what's happening, what happened in Yom HaShemaut, on 48, miracle that we got our land and that we won the war coming from the camps, but we have this nothing. Thank you, Hashem. 667, whatever happens, thank you, Hashem. Still, people are not thanking Hashem. And so I tell this whole story and I want to come to now and they take the microphone away from me.
Wow.
It's a birthday party, and nobody wants to know anything about what's really going on in the world.
Right.
But afterwards, people standing in line to thank me.
Wow.
So it feels like, and then I thought I ruined the party, but on the other hand, I did what I had to do. But is that?
Yes, that is definitely a Lo Havu.
That's definitely who you are.
Right, and it is. It's definitely
it's like
who you are.
That is really true.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
But the relationship with your husband is a husband. You figure out how to get, make it deeper.
And
not to destroy it.
So all that whole realm of things.
Well, on the way here this morning, I was noticing walking in front of me, like a beautiful young girl from a back, wearing this gorgeous pink dress and like chunky black jeans. And I noticed she's, wearing like some sleeves together, long hair, and I'm thinking, Is she religious? She's wearing a skirt. She has a good image. Something happened. She like bumps slightly into this older woman who was carrying two packages. And the next minute I see her, she took the one package that had a big watermelon in it, and she's carrying this woman's watermelon. She says, you don't have to. She says, oh, look out. Like I gave her a big smile and I was like, wow, witness something. So she's had to deal with somebody older. She's walking with this older man.
She should pay us for a little album.
She gave me some nice treasures.
Yeah.
So I was connected, Lo Havu. אין דבר חדש מתחת לשמש.
Well, but we do have chidushim, but it's whatever the spark was, it's I don't know. it's like they say, you know, Garden of Eden pretty much was light bodies and everything. So all the things that don't seem earthly and should be violated by that, Ein Chadash Tachat HaShemayim. Who knows?
Sometimes we say there's a Lamala Mimitachat HaShemesh.
But can it be that people didn't see it before in an anger shmiyot?
Yeah.
It can be.
But it's not just that people didn't see it. It's that it really, the configuration never happened before.
As actually said
it just doesn't seem relevant. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but I know that it's not a violation. I mean, because everything, you know, like the, even the mitzvot would violate it. Because it was the first time they were brought into the
loophole.
Yeah. So it has to be a loophole. I just don't know it.
Okay.
Also, just looking at the individual, you know, in the moment. I mean, that means that everything that a person does in the moment that's truly authentic to them,
is the chidush.
It's the chidush.
Yeah.
It's a very mekushat shri.
Right. That is true.
If they do it with the right kavan.
Right, she's well bedecked. Okay. So, the Be'er Mayim Chayim.
Be'er Mayim Chayim of sins.
Mm-hmm.
The Zenigrat Yishutim the Lohabu.
So he's commenting on the Magid and picking it up with that the things that are called Yishutim the Lohabu, the creative and unique Ruach HaKodesh driven Chidushim of our lives.
וייחודים הבאים על ידם, הקדוש ברוך הוא מתענג ושש ושמח בהם ביותר ויותר.
Right, so this is, it says, and these ייחודים, these דבקותים,
unifications,
that, that we are, that we've discussed and are, just, are
All these are Yehudim. We call somebody
carrying
the watermelon is a Yehud.
Because it's heaven on earth. It's like, you know, it's a chidush. So the Yehudim haba'im al yadam. So the chidush of the sentence is just how happy that makes Hashem. That Hashem gets oneg and sason and simcha from to the ultimate degree from these unique, like he loves our mitzvot, but he also takes special pleasure from the individual acts of service that we access through our wanting to use life in a way that is the most good serving and God serving way possible, the most spiritually productive way possible.
Why? לצד שהיו מרוחקים מאוד מאוד מאור פניו יתברך למטה.
Right, and so it's because this secular, the elements of the secularity of these moments, meaning like the watermelon and the lady with the bags, and you know, it's like a material, it's material, and yet it's heavenly in terms of the adornment of the Shechina that was produced by that moment and that response to it. Right, and so when the sparks are raised from these moments, there is no end to the Simcha and Oneg that Hashem Hashem takes from. Regarding the matter of adornments that have not been, the unifications that come via this root bring great pleasure, joy, and delight to the Holy One, doubled and redoubled. This is because something so earthy and material and so far from the radiance of divine countenance, a spark below that is not enlivening an explicitly holy object or activity, i.e. mitzvah, a spark that is raised through a person's good deed in a way that has never happened before, has now been discovered by someone seeking Hashem's will in a situation with no clear halakhic guidance. In such a case, there is no end to the joy and pleasure and bounty of delight that comes to the Creator from that right action.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, I've always had a problem with this idea of people saying, you know, it gives Hashem joy.
Uh-huh.
What can that even mean? Uh-huh. I know what that full joyful person is, but
Although these teachings do not mention Noga explicitly, the terminology of adornments that have not been clearly refers to the neutral layer of life, meaning all the things that are not intrinsically holy but also not forbidden and are newly configured in each moment. That is the definition of Noga. So Rav Tzadok HaKohen strengthens
Rav Tzadok HaKohen strengthens the premise from another angle. While exploring the five kolot, literally cries, that accompany the ten dibrot, literally the ten statements.
People might not be familiar with it, but it is a teaching of the Zohar and other works that there were ten dibrot, there's a dibrot, and there were five kolot, or there's different opinions, five and also seven is one opinion, kolot that were the inner, Dibor, which is the letters broken up into their words that conveys content. And then there's the kolot, which are the kind of emotional force behind that communication. Right, so well, with Rav Tzadok, he understands them as, he's basing on the Zohar, that the five and the five are related to each other. And so the one and the five and the two and the six and are each kind of the wind of them is really the level of soul that is shared by the two in the way. And then he goes and it's a really beautiful teaching about how you see the connection between the two.
And these are also connected to the same Tehillim, which talks about Kol Hashem.
Right, but I think there's seven in there.
Right.
The Zohar 5. Okay. There are literally 10 statements, but traditionally the 10 commandments. He notes that the Zohar distinguishes between the commands themselves that convey the behavioral do's and don'ts versus their koholot, the soul force behind the commands that transported the people into an altered state of awareness. Each call resonated with a different level of soul and expressed itself as the link between one commandment from the left tablet with its counterpart on the right. He identifies a five-step sequence of expanding consciousness that builds from Nefesh to Yechida, focusing here on the last two levels, Chaya and Yechida, with their corresponding commandments. I am extracting only that part of this teaching that is relevant to the subject at hand.
So just take a peek at the table before, just so you just get a sense. I don't want to spend time with it, but just to scan it. And so we're going to be dealing with 4 and 5, the Shabbat, Chaya, and and unimpairance.
Are you saying the Shabbat?
No, just you'll see as we go into the text. I don't want to do the whole teaching. Okay. So starting with the fourth commandment.
The fourth commandment instructs us to observe Shabbat, and Rav Tzadok explicitly associates the observance of Shabbat with the Noga realm. For that reason, the power of Shabbat, it raises the Noga, or sacred realm, into the sphere of holiness.
Like that's one of the teachings, is that that's why we can dress up and have gourmet foods and relations between husband and wife, all things that are, you know, like not intrinsically holy, and there's kipanoga really, and so they do have a certain danger to them of getting lost in the pleasure of them and forgetting about the giver of the pleasure, i.e. Hashem. And so, but the teaching is that the whole structure of reality shifts on Shabbat, there is a protective container of Shabbat that sanctifies everything that's happening during that time. Things that are essentially secular in their expression become sanctified by the power of the Shabbos lights. And so there's a different, like theoretically one can, should, and is through observing Shabbat, like becoming attuned to the difference between getting dressed up on Shabbat versus getting dressed up during the week, like, or gourmet foods here, gourmet foods there, like that. You know, we say that there's a special tom to Shabbos food, so, but it's a special tom to all the kind of noga activities that we are doing on Shabbat that are different on Shabbat.
I wonder what that's like with Shabbat, you know, we make Shabbat.
Right.
You're inside.
It's everything you're doing is sitting. You sleep, yeah. You're eating, it's all mitzvah.
Right.
And maybe it's a little bit less because it's a mitzvah now.
Right. It is a little bit different.
And we can also do the Tosefta Shabbat.
Yeah.
It's, say at 3 o'clock or at 4 o'clock, uh-huh. I'm accepting about it. Uh-huh. You have stretched a dough that you're rolling out.
Yeah.
And if you're not letting out Shabbat until 10 o'clock, would have stretched it and literally changed the reality of the state of that reality. Being
Right. Right. Okay. Who's reading?
Shabbat is served by refraining from work, reciting prayers, and other spiritual practices. Yet its observance also includes eating special foods, dressing up, taking a nap, singing songs around the table, marital relations which are worldly pleasures that have no intrinsic holiness to them. They are from the noble realm. If, on a weekday, one brings good serving attention to those enjoyments, they are sanctified. They impact the soul and the world for good. If, however, on a weekday, one would do them strictly for ego gratification with no thought of God and no blessing recited, they would dull the soul and degrade the spark. But Shabbat lifts these activities into the realm of Kedusha. On Shabbat, even if a person's motive is self-serving, the day itself raises the yoga activity into the realm of Kedusha and sanctifies it. I was going to right away, when I read that, I'm like, wait, what about the Kavana? And then it went into that, like, it's not
specific
about the Kavanah on Shabbos,
it's
just pleasure in Shabbos.
Right. I mean, it's nice to bring Kavanah also, but even if you don't.
From a Kabbalistic perspective, the fourth cult and its mitzvah of Shabbat trains us to elevate the neutral realm. That skill and discipline is a forward and essential step in our spiritual path. Week after week on Shabbat, we practice sanctifying the yoga realm by habituating our nerve nets and spiritual taste buds to that endeavor, a prerequisite to navigating the turnstile that guards even footing.
It is practice for
That's why the Gemara says that Shabbos is the 60th of Olam Haba.
Nice. Okay. We're not finished with this idea.
Now, with that as a backdrop, that Tzadik Tzadok explains that the fifth call, corresponding to honoring parents and the highest level of soul called Yechida, is the final reckoning. The Kabbalistic interpretation of honoring parents, says he, is to respect our mind and our heart, to trust and honor their advice.
People might be familiar with the Parshufim in Kabbalah. So the Parshuf connected to Chokhmah is Abba, and the Parshuf connected to Bina is Ima. So that's what he's working with.
Chokhmah, wisdom, corresponds to the persona of Abba, Father in Kabbalah, while Bina, heart-centered intuition, corresponds to Ima, Mother. In mastering the Noga realm by sanctifying it, we become able to trust the tools at our disposal when assessing the world. We must be able to make decisions on our own when there is no rule book to consult. At this Yechida stage of a spiritual path, the secret of honoring parents means to trust our own mind and
Abba and heart, Ima.
Our logic and intuitions, but mystically, they really do give birth to the particulars of our life.
It's so interesting. Abba Ima give birth.
Because it's kind of a mental, but it's also a heart. So it's really kind of a heart-centered intuition.
Are you referring to that?
It's Chokhmah is Abba and
Reza.
Yeah. And Lush.
Right, so stand us right in the next frame. That's why I wonder why you talk about it for the heart.
Because she gives, right. And it is considered that like the heart of the, there is a notion that it's the heart of the mind, that there's a heart of the mochin, which is Bina.
It's just so difficult, because when you think of the abusive father, where are you going?
Right. Yeah, it's, right.
Should I go on?
Yes.
At this point on our spiritual journey, says Dr. Philip, Hashem pulls out and leaves us to our own devices.
Right, this is an intense thing, he says, that Hashem pulls, Hashem is involved in the moment-by-moment Ruach HaKodeshness of our life, and here Hashem pulls out for a moment and leaves us to our own devices.
It's the definition of any nisayon. Hashem says, can you do it yourself? That's amazing.
Right.
Have we internalized spiritual law? Are we transformed by our mitzvah practice and Shabbat observance? Are we immune to flattery and insults? Can we find the most spiritually productive path through the noga realm, using head and heart to guide our way? The finish line is when our instinctive and reflexive response to the world is always and only in line with spiritual law. God's will and Torah, in the most expansive sense of that term. Our soul cell is the mystical body of Israel. The mystical body of Israel has reached full stature. That's it. So we have to learn how to do it. You going on?
Well, we have 4 minutes. Anybody want to talk about this? Okay. With the Shekhinah now strengthened, galvanized, and self-supporting, she can embrace the full revelation. We talked about that, the creation begins with Hashem's Tzimtzum, and then brings creation into being. And that's the relationship that we're all operating within, as we're a cell in the Shekhinah, learning how to consummate our relationship with Hashem. And the relationship is a little bit less than satisfying because Hashem has to hide himself in order that we can bear him. So it's not really an ideal relationship. One person has to hide themselves in order to make the relationship work. So that's one way of understanding what we're doing in these 6,000 years of engagement, basically. From this perspective, the Har Sinai, Matan Torah was the engagement, the Kiddushin, and the Nisuin, is that the right? Is the Messianic and post-Messianic time, where Hashem is able to really be fully himself, and we are able to embrace that revelation. So with the Shekhinah now strengthened, galvanized, and self-supporting, she can embrace the full revelation of divinity without melting down. Now the cosmic He, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and she, the Shekhinah, finally meet in the Ari's words, panim b'panim shaveh l'gamrei, face to face and completely equal. Now for the first time, the Shekhinah and the Holy One enjoy a consummate embrace and begin their journey of ever-deepening union and reunion that is their eternal destiny. These teachings that speak the praises of Klipat Noga depict our ultimate achievement, where the disparity between mitzvah and noga all but disappears. The zohama of shame is washed through or burned out. The personality becomes so transparent that there is almost no difference anymore between ani and ayin. In proportion to our processing of shame is our progress in this regard.
What does it mean there's no... We're so clear of what Hashem, who you are, who he is, and what he wants from us.
Right.
That
we're embodying it. There is some kind of self-definition still, that kind of preserves our otherness. I mean, but there also is like the balance of otherness and oneness is very subtle. It's,
I think I missed something, because I didn't really get the start to the shame.
Right. So that's what we talked about before, is like the shame is the like distort, like what Hashem pulls out, what's happening there. Like, are we going to read the moment as it really is? Like, are we, like, have we become enlightened through our spiritual path, is basically. And the opposite of that is when we are still in subject to mohin dekatnut, which is the shame state of like this, which produces our distorted assessment of what's happening and how to respond to it.
We don't allow ourselves to express our creativity in the moment. We're too ashamed to allow that creative spirit to come forth.
Also that, and also the like kind of ego needing to kind of preserve its position on top and might and all that, which also creates distortion.
You can't make the right choice if your ego is still.
Right. But the promise is we are gonna get there.
And I was just holding that. Let me say that.
Very beautiful.
Thank you, Ashton.
This book?
Yeah.
I'll bring one. I'll bring one next week.
I just wanted to see if I had them. I was in the States and in the war, and I had obstacles coming today. I'm like, I have to come to class. And it was worth it, even though I came late. I got so much out of it. And it was actually the path out that I was late. I was in the gabool of doing elevating and nobody. I should just put it down to them, but it was helping a client off hours. But I just want to say, it really was elevating. I'm glad. I'm like, I'll come. Thank you.
Great.
It's
I just bought that.